Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Captain Serrano, Sweet Delight.
Station Tug 34, permission to grapple.
Permission to grapple.
All fast, on your signal.
Captain Serrano of Sweet Delight, permission to undock on your signal.
All clear on station. Confirm all clear aboard.
All clear aboard.
Graphic Audio presents The Serrano Legacy by Elizabeth Moon. Book 1, Hunting Party, Part 1. Narrated by Nanette Savard. With performances by Colleen Delaney, David Coyne, Terrence Hazelford, Richard Rowan, Michael John Casey, Christopher Graybill, Sonny Lasky, M.B. Van Dorn, Tess Rowan, Thomas Penny, Dylan Lynch, James Lewis, James Konacek, and Mort Shelby.
Harris Serrano walked from her room in the small but respectable dockside hotel on Rockhouse Station to the berth of her new command, convinced that she looked like an idiot. No one laughed aloud, but that only meant the bystanders had chosen to snicker later, rather than risk immediate confrontation with an ex-Regular Space Services officer on the beach. Harris kept her eyes away from any of those who might be contemplating humor among the dockside traffic of the commercial district. Her ears burned. She could feel the glances raking her back. She would not have changed her military posture even if she could have walked any other way. She had been RSS from birth or before. Daughter of officers, admiral's granddaughter and niece, a service family for all the generations anyone bothered to count. Even that miserable first year at the academy had seemed familiar, almost homey. She had heard the stories from parents, uncles, aunts, all her life. And here she was, tricked out in enough gold braid and color to satisfy a planet-bound admiral from one of the minor principalities, all because of the whims of a rich old woman with more money than sense. They had to be laughing behind her back, those merchanter officers and crewmen who didn't meet her eyes, who went about their business as if purple and scarlet were normal uniform colors, as if two sleeves covered with gold rings didn't look ridiculous, as if the rim of gold and green striped cord around collar, lapels, and cuffs didn't tell everyone that an RSS officer had descended to the level of carting wealthy eccentrics on pleasure jaunts in something far more like a mansion than a spacefaring ship. Commercial dockside ended abruptly at a scarred gray wall with a lock gate in it. Harris inserted her card. She found herself caged between the barred gate behind and a steel door with a thick window. Another key slot. This time, her card produced a human door opener, who swung the door aside and held out his hand for her papers. She handed over the neat packet civilian life required. Master's license, certifications in 5 specialties, Imperial ID, military record, abbreviated, only the unclassified bones, letters of recommendation, and, what mattered most here, Lady Cecilia DeMarctos's seal of employment. The human, station security or Garand family, Harris didn't know which, ran a hand scanner over this last and replaced the entire pile in its file cover before handing it back to her.
Welcome to North, Captain Serrano. May I be of assistance?
Her throat closed a moment, remembering the words she would have heard if she had gone through a similar lock gate on the other side of the commercial docks, where sleek, gray RSS cruisers nuzzled the station side by side, where her gray uniform with its glowing insignia would have received crisp salutes and the welcome due a comrade in arms.
Welcome to the fleet.
She would have heard that greeting used anywhere, anytime they came together away from civilians. But she could not go back there, back where her entire past would wrap around her. She had resigned her commission. She would never hear those words again.
No, thank you. I know where the ship is.
She would not say its name yet, though it was her new command. She had grown up with ships named for battles, for monsters, for older ships with long histories. She could not yet say she commanded Sweet Delight. North, on all stations, defined the environs of aristocracy. Wealth and privilege could be found anywhere, in the RSS as well as the commercial docks, but always near something. Here was nothing but wealth and its servants. This deck had carpeted walkways, not extruded plastic sheeting. The shops had no signs, only house emblems. Each docking bay had its own lock gate, enclosing two large rooms. One marked service entrance, lined with racks and shelving for provisions delivered, and the other furnished luxuriously as a reception salon for going-away parties. Harris's card in the slot produced another human door opener, this time a servant in livery, who ushered her into the salon. Harris made her way between overstuffed sofas and chairs covered in lavender plush and piled with pillows in garish colors, between low black tables and pedestals supporting what were probably priceless works of art, though to her eye, they looked like globs of melted space debris after a battle. The actual docking tube lay unguarded. Harris frowned. Surely even civilians had someone watching the ship's main hatch, even with the security of a lock gate on the dock itself. She paused before stepping over the line that made the legal division between dock and ship. The lavender plush lining of the access tube hid all the vital umbilicals that connected the ship to station life support.
Those lines should be visible. Surely even civilians have regulations to follow.
Underfoot, the lavender plush carpet felt 5 centimeters thick. A warm breath of air puffed out of the ship itself, a warm breath flavored not with the spice she remembered from the interview, but with the sour stench of the morning after a very large night before. Her nose wrinkled. She could feel her back stiffening. It might be someone else's ship in principle, but she did not allow a dirty mess on any ship she commanded, and would not now.
Well, Cecilia, it's not fair.
Harris took in the situation at a glance. One tall, angular, gray-haired woman, her employer. 3 sulky, overdressed young men that Harris would not have had on her ship, and their obvious girlfriends. All rumpled, and one still passed out on a lavender couch that mashed the plush carpet and walls. Streaks of vomit stained its smooth velour. As she came through the barrier, Harris smiled her normal good-morning bridge smile at her employer.
Good morning, m'lady.
The youths, all but the unconscious snorer on the couch, stared. Harris could feel her ears going hot and ignored them, still smiling at Cecilia Artemisia Veronica Penelope, heiress of more titles than anyone needed, let alone more money. That lady was restored to instant unruffled calm by the appearance of someone to whom it meant something.
Ah, Captain Serrano, how nice to have you aboard. Our departure will be delayed, but only briefly.
She looked at the chestnut-haired youth.
Until my nephew is settled. I presume your things are already aboard?
Sent ahead, m'lady.
Good. Then Bates will show you to your quarters.
Bates materialized from some angle of corridor and nodded at Harris. Harris wondered if she would be introduced to the nephew now or later. She was sure she could take that pout from his lips if given the chance, but she wouldn't get the chance. She followed Bates, tall, elegant, so much the butler of the screen and stage it was hard to believe him real, down the carpeted passage to her suite. She would rather have gone to the bridge. Not this bridge, but the bridge of the rapier, or even a lowly maintenance tug. Bates stood aside at her door.
If the captain wishes to rekey the locks now...
She looked at that impassive face. Did he mean to imply that they had thieves on board? That someone might violate the privacy of her quarters? The captain's quarters? She had thought she knew how far down the scale she'd fallen... to become a rich lady's yacht captain, but she had not conceived of needing to lock her quarters.
Thank you.
Bates touched a magnetic wand to the lock faces. She put her hand on each one.
Name, please.
Captain Harris Serrano.
Welcome home, Captain Serrano.
Bates handed her a fat ring of wands.
These are the rekeying wands for the ship's crew and all the operating compartments. They're coded. You'll find the full architectural schematics loaded on your desk display. The crew will await your arrival on the bridge, at your convenience.
She didn't even know if she could ask Bates to tell the crew when to expect her, or if that was something household staff never did. She had already discovered that the house staff and the ship crew had very little to do with each other.
I could just pass the word to Mr. Gavin, the engineer. Since Captain Olin left, Lady Cecilia has often asked me to speak to Mr. Gavin.
Captain Olin, Harris knew, had been fired.
Thank you. 1 hour.
She glanced at the room's chronometer, a civilian model which she would replace with the one in her luggage.
Philip will escort you.
She opened her mouth to say it was not necessary. Even in this perfumed and padded travesty of a ship, she could find the bridge by herself, but decided not to challenge their assumptions yet.
Thank you.
Her master's certificate went into the mounting plaque on the wall. Her other papers went into the desk. Her luggage, she had asked that it not be unpacked, cluttered one corner of her office. Beyond that was a smaller room, then the bathroom. She forced herself to call it that, and beyond that, her bedroom. A space larger than an admiral would have on most ships, and far larger than anyone of her rank ever had, even on a station. A suite. Part of the price being paid to lure a real spacer, a real captain, into this kind of work. Within the hour, she had unpacked her few necessary clothes, her books, her reference data cubes, and made sure that the desk display would handle them. The chronometer on the wall now showed service standard time as well as ship's time and station time, and had the familiar overlapping segments of color to delineate 4, 6, and 8-hour watches. She had reviewed the crew bios in the desk display, and she had shrugged away her regrets. It was all over now, all those years of service, all her family's traditions. From now on, she was Harris Serrano, captain of a yacht, and she would make the best of it. And they wouldn't know what hit them.
Captain! Captain! Captain on the bridge.
Some of them suspected within moments of her arrival on the bridge. Whatever decorator had chosen all the lavender and teal furnishings of the rest of the ship, the bridge remained functional, if almost toy-like in its bright, shiny compactness. The crew had to squeeze in uncomfortably. Harris noticed who squeezed in next to whom, and who wished this were over. They had heard, no doubt. They could see what they could see. She might be wearing purple and scarlet, but she had the look and knew it. All those generations of command came out in her eyes. Hers met theirs. Blue, gray, brown, black, green, hazel, clear, hazy, worried, frightened, challenging. Mr. Gavin, the engineer, thin, almost wispy, and graying. Navigation first, all too perky, was female and young, and standing close to communications first, who had spots and the slightly adenoidal look that Harris had found in the best comm techs on any ship. The moles, environmental techs, so called everywhere from their need to crawl through pipes, glowered at the back. They must have suspected she'd seen the ship's records already. Moles never believed that strange smells in the air were their fault. They were convinced that other people, careless people, put the wrong things down the wrong pipe and caused the trouble. Gavin's junior engineering techs, distancing themselves from the moles, tried to look squeaky clean and bright. Harris had read their records. One of them had failed the third-class certificate 4 times. The other juniors, navigation's sour-faced paunchy male and communications wispy female, were clearly picked up at bargain rates for off-prime shift work. Harris began, as always on a new ship, with generalities. Let them relax. Let them realize she wasn't stupid, crazy, or vicious. When she'd seen the relaxation, she got to business.
Now, about emergency drills. I see you've had no drills since docking here. Why is that, Mr. Gavin?
Well, Captain, after Captain Olin left, I didn't like to seem, you know, like I was taking liberties above my station.
I see. And before that, I noticed that there had been no drills since the last planetfall. That was Captain Olin's decision, I suppose?
From Gavin's expression, that was not the reason, but he went along gratefully.
Yes, yes, Captain, that would be it. He was the captain, after all.
Someone stirred in the back, but they were so crammed together she couldn't be sure who it was. She would find out. She smiled at them, suddenly happy. It might be only a yacht, but it was a ship, and it was her ship.
We will have drills. Emergency drills save lives. I expect all you firsts to ready your divisions.
We surely can't have time for a drill before launch.
She stared at the sour-faced navigation second until he blushed.
Captain, sorry, ma'am.
It depends. I know you're all readying for launch, but I would like a word here with the pilot and nav first.
They edged out of the cramped space. She knew the muttering would start as soon as they cleared the hatch. Ignoring that, she fixed the navigation first with a firm glance. Harris hoped she was as good as she looked.
Sirkin, isn't it?
Yes, Captain. Brigdis Sirkin, Lalos Colony.
Yes, I saw your file. Impressive qualification exam.
Sirkin had topped the list with a perfect score, rare even in RSS-trained personnel. The younger woman blushed and grinned.
But what I want to know is whether you plotted the final approach from Dunlin to here.
No, Captain, I didn't. Not entirely, that is.
I wondered why someone who'd swept the exam would choose such an inefficient solution. Tell me about it.
Well, ma'am, Captain Olin was a good captain, and I'm not saying anything against him, but he liked to do things in a certain way.
Harris glanced at the pilot. Plissen, his tag said. He had been another rich lady's pilot before he came here.
Did you have anything to do with it?
The pilot shot Sirkin an angry glance.
She thinks she can shave time to the bone. It's like she never heard of flux storms. I guess you could call it efficient, if you're on a warship. But I wasn't hired to kill, m'lady.
Ah. So you thought Sirkin's original course dangerous and Captain Olin backed you?
Well, yes, Captain. And I expect you'll stick with her, being as you're Space Fleet trained.
I don't like getting smeared across space any better than anyone else. But I've reviewed Sirkin's work, only as combined with yours and Captain Olin's. Sirkin, what was your original course here?
It's in the nav comp, Captain. Shall I direct it to your desktop?
If you please. I'll look it over, see if I think you're dangerous or not. Did you ever have any Space Fleet time, Plissen?
No, Captain.
Harris wasn't sure she wanted a half-hearted first pilot.
Then I suggest you withdraw your judgment of RSS operations until you see some. War is dangerous enough without adding recklessness to it. I'll expect professional performance from both you and Navigator Sirkin.
She turned to go, then turned back, surprising on their faces the expression she had hoped to find.
And by the way, you may expect drills. Space is less forgiving than I am of sloppy technique.
Lady Cecilia had noticed the shadow in the tube only a moment before her new captain came aboard. She could have wished for less promptness. She would have preferred to finish reaming out her nephew and the residue of his going-away party in the decent privacy afforded by her household staff. Bates knew better than to stick his nose in at a time like this. But the woman was ex-military, and not very ex, by her carriage and expression. Of course she would not be late. Even her hair and toenails probably grew on schedule. Cecilia wanted to throttle the condescension off the dark face that rose serene above the purple and scarlet uniform. No doubt she had no nephews, or if she did, they were being lovingly brought up in boot camp somewhere. She probably thought it would be easy to remake Ronnie and his set. Whereas Cecilia had known, from the moment of Ronnie's birth, that he was destined to be a spoiled brat. Charming, bright enough if he bothered, handsome to the point of dangerousness with that thick, wavy chestnut hair, those hazel eyes, that remaining dimple, but spoiled rotten by his family and everyone else. He had expected her to let them all travel with him, all 20 or so of his favorites among his fellow officers and their sweethearts of both sexes. She'd ignored that, smiled at her new captain, and called Bates to take the captain to her quarters. And away she went, impossibly bright-eyed for this hour of the morning. No adolescent partying had disturbed her sleep, her trim figure making the girls in the room look like haggard barflies. Which they weren't, really. It was terrible what girls did these days, but these were decent girls, of reasonably nice families. Nothing like hers, or Ronnie's, except Bubbles, the snoring one, and the present cause of dissension, but nice enough. With a last glance at the captain's retreating form, she turned back to Ronnie.
"What is not fair, young man, is that you are intruding on my life, taking up space on my yacht, making my staff work harder, and all because you lacked the common sense to keep your mouth shut about things which no gentleman discusses."
Sulky. He had been sulky at one, at two. His parents had doted on his adorable tantrums, his big lower lip. He was sulky now, and she did not dote on the lip or the tongue behind it.
"She said I was better. It's not fair that I'm getting sent away when she's the one who said it. She wanted to be with me."
"She said it to you in the confidence of the bedroom. And you don't even know if she meant it or if she says it to everyone."
"Of course she meant it. I am better."
"I won't argue. I will only remind you that you may be better in bed with the prince's favorite singer, but you are now on my yacht by order of your father and the king, and the singer is stuck with the prince, literally and figuratively. You're here and he's there, and you've gained nothing by blabbing except whatever momentary amusement you shared with your barracks mates." Cecilia knew the odious George, who had well earned the nickname everyone in society knew, and his father fairly well, and dismissed the snicker as an unconscious copy of his father's courtroom manner. She supposed it went over well in the junior mess of the Royal Space Service, where the young sprouts of aristocracy and wealth flaunted their boughten commissions in the intervals of leave and training. She ignored the side glances of her nephew and his crony.
"You're the one who talked. The lady didn't. Therefore, you are in trouble, and you are sent away. And it's my misfortune that I happen to be near enough to serve your father's purpose."
He opened his mouth to say something else she was sure she would not want to hear.
"It's better than it could have been, young Ronald, as you will see when you quit feeling sorry for yourself. And I am stretching my generosity to let you bring these..." She waved her hand at the others. "When it crowds my ship and wastes my time. If it weren't that Bubbles and Buttons were going to Bunny's anyway..."
"Well, in fact, they don't want to go."
"Nonsense. I've already sent word I'm bringing them. A season in the field will do you all immense good. And I don't want any of you sneaking off ship to cause trouble on the station before we launch. It's bad enough having to wait for your luggage. I shall have your father pay the reset fees for changing the launch schedule. I hope he takes it out of your allowance."
"But that's not..."
She held up her hand before Fair could emerge and decided to drop her own bombshell now.
"And by the way, my new captain is ex-regular space service, so don't try any of your tricks with her. She could probably tie you all in knots without trying."
Cecilia turned on her heel and walked out, satisfied that she had given them something besides her hard-heartedness to think about. It was too bad, really. She lived on her yacht, precisely so as to avoid family complications, just as she had avoided marriage and political service. They could have found some other way to keep Ronnie out of the capital for a year or so. They didn't have to use her, as if she were a handy piece of furniture. But that was Berenice all over again. Big sisters existed to be of service to the beauty of the family. Stores. She would have to check with Bates to be sure they had ordered enough additional food. After last night, she suspected they might need more. Young people did eat so, when they ate. That miserable decorator Berenice had sent her to insisted on doing the whole ship in lavender and teal, with touches of acid green and cream, but she had not let him in here. Perhaps the young people preferred lavender plush, but she hated it. Here in her own rooms, she could have it her way. Brighter colors, polished wood, carved chairs piled with pillows. She paused at her desk. Inlaid wood made a pattern of vines and flowers. Until she pressed the central blossom, it could have passed for an antique of old earth. The desktop cleared, showing the floor plan of that deck, with ghostly shadows of the others. A cluster of dots showed Ronnie and friends back in the lounge. A dot in her bedroom. That would be Myrtis, her maid. A dot for the captain in her quarters. A moving dot that must be Bates coming back. She touched her finger to that one.
Yes, madam?
Have Cook check the quantities Ronnie and his friends consumed last night. They seem to eat quite a lot.
Cook has estimated an additional 15% over your orders yesterday, madam, and has the purchase order ready for your stamp.
Thank you, Bates.
She might have known. They were usually two steps ahead of her, but that was their duty. She flicked up the lower service deck on the display, found Cook's dot, and touched it. Cook transferred the purchase order to her desktop, and she looked at it. Even with six additional people aboard, it looked like enough to feed them all three times over. It would serve them right, she thought, if she made them eat survival rations until they got to Bunny's. Certainly it would cost less and take up less room. Cook had pointed out that they'd need to air up two more refrigeration units and set out another full section of Ponics. That would start another argument between crew side and staff side. The environmental techs were ship's crew, under the captain's command. Cecilia knew better than to interfere with her captain's crew. But that part of Ponics devoted to the kitchen came under the heading of gardening, which meant staff, her staff. Felix, head gardener, and two hoys, one female, kept her private solarium in fresh flowers, and cooks supplied with fresh vegetables. Felix and the environmental techs always got into some hassle which required her decision. One of the things she had not liked about her former captain was his tendency to let things slide until she had to quell an incipient riot in staff. She found Felix's icon, touched it, and told him about the Ponics section. He wanted to use half of it for a new set of exotics he'd bought seed stock for. The pictures of the so-called vegetables didn't impress her. Felix insisted, though, that if he could have seed available when they arrived at Bunny's, he could trade with Bunny's ferocious head gardener for her favorite and rarest mushrooms. Cecilia shrugged. Ronnie and his pals could eat the things she didn't like.
And what did you tell the moles, huh? You gotta let them know it's okay, whatever I grow.
I will tell Captain Serrano, our new captain, that I've approved your use of an additional Ponic section for fresh produce.
Yeah? They bother me. I'm sending them halibuts.
Felix would, too. He had done it before when displeased with someone. A genius of his type. But like most such geniuses, a trifle tempery. She put up with him for the luscious fruits and fresh vegetables, the abundant flowers, which so amazed those who came to dinner. No other yacht she knew of was completely self-sufficient in fresh produce. She looked again for the captain's icon and found it moving toward the bridge. Best not interrupt her now. She would have had the crew assembled. Cecilia's finger hovered over the control. She could easily listen in on the captain's first briefing, but she decided against it. Instead, she routed a message to the captain's desk about the Ponics and called up a credit status. The figures meant little to her. The reality was that she could afford to buy anything for sale on Rockhouse two or three times over. The desktop offered a bright-colored graphic which showed how much more she was spending to transport herself and six young people compared to herself alone. It didn't matter, and Berenice had transferred stock to cover it anyway. She called up Ronnie's status and pursed her lips. Berenice had put him on the Silver family line, and he had already used it. Harden's Clothiers, Vetris Accessories, Spaulding. He had started with two cubes of storage, and at this rate would need another two.
Aunt Cecilia, please, I need to talk to you.
Ah, Ronnie, very good. I meant to ask you, did you bring your hunting tackle?
My what?
Your riding clothes, your saddles.
No, of course not. Aunt Cecilia, just because you're crazy enough to ride big stupid animals across rocks and mud...
I presumed that that was your rather large order at Harden's and Vestris's and Spaulding's. But since it wasn't, perhaps you'd return some of that foppery, whatever it was, and get yourself some decent riding kit. We are going to Bunny's, as you know, for the season. And since I'm saddled with you, you might as well saddle a horse and learn something useful.
She felt good about the pun. Puns usually came to her 4 hours too late, if at all. The fashion in invective, she was happy to discover, had swung once more from the rough crudities copied from the lower classes to an entertaining polysyllabic Baroque style. When Ronnie ran out of breath, which happened more quickly, she noted, with the longer words and phrases, she interrupted again before he could start another rampage.
"I do not care that you do not like horses or riding, or that none of your set consider hunting a reasonable or enjoyable pastime. I do not care if you are miserable for the entire year of your exile. You may sulk in your cabin if you like. You will certainly not sulk in mine, or interfere with my pleasure one bit more than I can help. And if you do not order yourself the proper clothes, saddles, and so on, I shall do it for you and charge it to your account."
Although it would really make sense to wait until they were at Bunny's. All the really good saddlers came there for the season. But her blood was up. So it seemed was his.
"Order what you like, but I am not about to pretend to copy the amusements of a horse-faced old spinster with more money than sense. I'll be damned if you ever find me on a horse chasing some innocent, helpless animal across the dripping fields."
"If you think the fox is either innocent or helpless, young Ronald, you are more foolish than I think."
She was not sure which of them broke the connection. She did not care. She called her personal assistant at Spaulding's and arranged everything as she wished. Of course they knew all his measurements already, and of course they were happy to help a wealthy aunt surprise an almost as wealthy nephew. In a final burst of pique, she put the bill on her own account, and not Berenice's. She wanted no questions from the doting mother who had let the brat become so useless. Harris led the way into her cabin, wondering if civilians had any concept of shipboard courtesy. Would they know enough to stay on their side of the office? Sirkin did. She stood across the desk as Harris called up the files on the desk display, looking young and earnest. She looked at the course Sirkin had originally planned. Direct, reasonable flux levels, no abrupt course changes, adequate clearance of the mapped obstacles. It was close to the course she would have selected, although RSS ships could and did shave the clearance margins in the interest of speed.
And Captain Olin disapproved this course? Why?
He said it was too risky. Here.
Sirkin laid her finger on the display, and it enlarged to show finer detail.
He claimed that coming this close to T-77 with a flux of 0.06 was suicidal. I asked him why, and he said he was captain and I'd learn better in time.
Harris leaned over the display.
Did you look up T-77 in the reference library?
Yes, ma'am.
Harris looked up at the younger woman, then remembered that it might be legitimate civilian usage. The RSS used sir for either sex. It meant respect, not recognition of one's chromosome type. Sirkin seemed respectful and attentive.
Baird and Logan said that T-77 is a gravitational anomaly, nothing more. Ciro speculates that it's a burnt-out star. But all the references agree that it's not as dangerous as Gumma's Tangle, and it's perfectly safe to transit that at a flux of 0.2. I was being conservative.
Captain Olin must have had some reason. Your relative velocity would have been quite low there. Did you suggest boosting your flux and achieving a higher V?
No, ma'am. He said it was dangerous at 0.06. Boosting the flux would make it worse.
If he meant a flux-mass interaction, that's not the only danger out there.
Harris chewed her lip, thinking. She hadn't been in that area for a long time. She wished she had access to RSS charts and intelligence data. Sirkin had flushed, which made her look even younger.
But why didn't he say so? I could have redone it for a higher flux.
He didn't want to go anywhere near T-77. Let's see what else he didn't want to go near.
She looked at the rest of Sirkin's course, comparing it to Olin's, and called up references when needed. Slowly, she felt her way into Olin's logic.
He didn't want to go near any of the low-danger obstacles, did he? Made you go clear round Cumber's Finger instead of taking that short wedding ring hop. And that's a safe hop everyone takes. Made you wander over here. And why?
She looked up, to meet the same confusion in Sirkin's expression.
Did Lady Cecilia have a preferred arrival time? Did she ask him to be here on a certain day?
She had wanted to be here 8 days before we arrived for some kind of family party. Olin told her he couldn't make it. It's one reason she wanted a new captain. She said he was too slow.
Harris let her brows rise.
You heard her?
Well, I overheard it. I mean, Tani over on the staff side. He told engineering and Mr. Gavin told me.
Staff side?
You know, there's the household staff with Bates on top. And there's the ship's crew with the captain, with you on top. We're not supposed to mix much, but at certain levels we have to. Our moles are always getting into rows with Milady's gardeners.
Harris felt she'd fallen into a farce of some kind. Gardeners aboard ship? But she couldn't let this young woman sense her confusion.
When we say staff, we mean non-line officers.
Oh.
Sirkin clearly had no idea what that meant, and Harris let it pass. Far more important was getting this ship ready to travel. She could ask Sirkin, but she should learn more about the rest of the crew, and inspections would do just that. She looked back at Olin's chosen route and shook her head.
I wonder. It's as if he knew something about these areas not listed in the references.
There were always rumors about robbers' coasts and pirate dens to excuse ships that were showing up late or missing cargo, but those were just rumors, weren't they? Olin had chosen to skirt more dangerous, according to the references, points more closely. He had shaved past T-89 inside the line she'd have taken with a cruiser. Of course, a cruiser masked more. Slow on the first leg of the trip, hanging about for a long time, then racing through the middle section, direct and sure, then dodging about again at the end. Smuggling came to mind, but she controlled her expression. Later, she could figure out what, and with whom, Captain Olin had been smuggling.
And you're the newest crew member? What made you decide on this job rather than another?
Well, it was a friend of mine.
From the blush and tone of voice, a lover. Harris looked again. Blue eyes, brown hair, slender, unremarkable face. Just very young and very emotional. She kept her fingers crossed.
Aboard this ship?
No, ma'am. She's back at school. A third year in ship systems maintenance. If I'd signed with a corporate ship, they'd have expected me to stay with them forever.
Not really forever, Harris knew. But to the young, even the basic 5 and 10 year contracts sounded permanent.
When she graduates, she's not exactly the top of her class. We wanted to be together. Same ship, or at least same company.
So this is a temporary, until she graduates?
Yes, ma'am. But I'm not treating it any less seriously.
I should hope not. When are you planning to leave, Lady Cecilia?
It depends, really. She'll graduate while we're at that fox hunting place. At Cerealis, I mean. Lady Cecilia expects to get back to the Cassian system about 6 local months after that, and she won't take off planet work until she hears from me.
You hope, Harris thought. She had seen more than one juvenile romance collapse when a partner was off planet for a year or more.
You'll have to keep your mind on your duties. It's natural to worry about her, but...
Oh, I don't worry about her. She can take care of herself. And I won't be distracted.
Harris nodded, hoping they hadn't sworn vows of exclusion or anything silly like that. Those were the ones who invariably got an earnest message cube at the next port, with the defaulting lover explaining what happened at excruciating length. In her experience, it always happened to the best of the younglings in her crew.
Good. Now, I plan to have the crew cross-train in other disciplines. Would you prefer another bridge assignment or something more hands-on?
Anything you wish, Captain. I had 2 semesters of drive theory and 1 of maintenance, but I also had a double minor in communications and computer theory.
Very bright girl, if she topped out in her nav classes and done that as well. Harris approved.
We'll try you in communications and the more practical side of shipboard computing systems, then. That should keep you busy enough.
Yes, ma'am.
That's all, then.
With a last respectful nod, Sirkin left. No salute. Harris refused to give in to the wave of nostalgia she felt. She shrugged it away physically and drew a deep, steady breath. No more salutes, no more old friends she could call on to find out, for example, what was known about the members of her new crew. She might have that later, as she made friends in the Captain's Guild, but not now. And at the moment, that was her most pressing need, knowledge. According to the ship's record, all the crew but one had been supplied by the same employment agency. A good one, She had chosen to sign with them herself because of their reputation. They supplied crew to major commercial lines and trading corporations. Lady Cecilia was part of an important family. Surely they were not sending her their dregs. Yet she had the feeling that at least half these people were below average. She hadn't expected that, not with the wages Lady Cecilia had offered her and was paying the crew. She should have gotten more for her money. Sirkin was the only really top qualifier, just going by their records, which she didn't. Records only told so much. She punched up the local office of Uzmerdans and worked her way up the levels until she found someone she could really talk to.
Captain Serrano, yes? We, placed you with Lady Cecilia.
Yes. I noticed that Uzmerdans also placed other crew members, and I was wondering if you could give me some details.
All pertinent details should be in the ship files. Surely Captain Olin left the files open-keyed.
I've accessed the ship files, but I find nothing equivalent to our... to the Space Service's fitness reports. Are periodic evaluations handled by the captain aboard, or...
Oh, well, there's no established schedule, not really. In the commercial ships, of course, there's always some sort of corporate policy, but not on private yachts. Usually the captain keeps some sort of report. You found nothing?
Nothing. Just the data that might have been in the original applications. I thought perhaps you...
Oh, no. We don't keep track of that sort of thing at all.
After all, one could hardly recommend someone known to have problems on a previous vessel. Best not to know. Harris had known service people with the same attitude.
If there's nothing in the ship's files, then I'm afraid we can't help you. We could supply incomplete data on education, background, but nothing more than that. Sorry.
How do you choose whom to recommend to which employers?
How do we what?
I noticed that only Sirkin, the newest crew member, ranked particularly high in her class, and she's told me she was looking for a short-term job on a yacht for personal reasons. The others generally rank in the middle quartiles. Yet Lady Cecilia's paying top wages. I wondered why you weren't recommending these positions to your most qualified applicants.
Are you accusing us of sending Lady Cecilia unqualified crew members?
Not at all. But you aren't sending her your cream, are you?
We sent you.
Exactly. I know I'm not on the top of your list of captains, and I shouldn't be.
Well, that's true, I suppose. It's like this, Captain Serrano. There are good people, qualified people, who aren't right for every opening. You know what I mean. Surely you had people even in the RSS who were good, solid, dependable performers in ordinary circumstances, but you wouldn't want to have them in charge of a cruiser in battle.
That's true.
We supply crews to all sorts of people. We tend to hold out our best, our cream, as you said, for the positions where it matters most. It's true that Lady Cecilia is a valued client, and her family is important, but it's not like that yacht is the flagship of Garen Corporation, is it?
Not at all.
She's got a fine ship. Relatively new. Has it refitted at the right intervals. Spares no expense in maintenance. Travels safe routes at reasonable speeds. She doesn't need someone who can cope with a 20,000-passenger colonial transport or maneuvering in a convoy of freighters. Other people do. And her requirements dovetail nicely. We suggest for private yachts crew who are stable emotionally, perhaps a little sedate, obedient, willing to adapt to a variable schedule.
I see.
Harris did see. She did not like what it said about the agency's attitude toward her or toward her employer. She was sure Lady Cecilia had never been told that her safety was less important than that of a load of frozen embryos or bulk chemicals. She had trusted the agency, and the agency had sent her junk. It had not occurred to Harris before that very rich people could have junk foisted off on them so easily.
Thank you, anyway. I realize things are different in civilian life. I'll just have to adjust.
I'm sure you'll do very well.
Harris knew she would adjust, though not the way the agency intended. She would pull this crew up to some decent standard. She would exceed the agency's low expectations and make of Lady Cecilia's yacht a ship any captain could take pride in, even working with the slack crew she'd been given. She knew Lady Cecilia wanted as speedy a departure as possible, But the delay her nephew caused gave Harris just enough time to interview each member of her crew. Those short 5-minute meetings confirmed her original feeling that most of the crew were past whatever prime they'd had. At least the ship was good. A sound hull, components purchased from all the right places, regular maintenance at the best refitting docks. Like the crew, her instincts muttered. Harris blinked at the screen on her desk, fighting off worry. Surely Lady Cecilia hadn't been cheated on everything. Departure. Their slot in the schedule came late in the third shift. Lady Cecilia had already sent word that she preferred to sleep through undockings. Harris could understand that. She did too, on ships she didn't captain. By this time, the ship's own systems were all up and running. By law, a ship must test its own systems for 6 hours prior to a launch. Harris arrived on the bridge 2 hours before undock, having checked all the aired holds herself and as much of the machinery on which their lives depended as she could. Everywhere she'd looked, she'd found gleaming new casings, shiny metal, fresh inspection stickers, their time-bound inks still bright and colorful. It ought to mean everything was all right. And the unease she felt must be because this was a civilian ship, tricked out in plush and bright colors, rather than an honest warship. Her sulky pilot had the helm, his narrow brow furrowed. He was giving voice confirmation to the data already sent by computer. The Sweet Delight's registration, destination, planned route, beacon profiles, insurance coverage. Harris caught his eye and pointed to herself. She'd take over that tedious chore. The lists of required items came up on her command screen. Why an officer of an outbound vessel had to confirm by voice the closing of each account opened during a station visit, each time repeating the authorization number of the bank involved, she could not fathom. But so it was, and had been, time out of mind. Even on her own cruiser, someone had been required to formally state that each account was paid in full. It could take hours with a big ship. Here it was a minor chore.
Thank you, Sweet Delight. Final mail or deliveries?
Bates had told her that Lady Cecilia had a bag outgoing. The crew's mail had been stacked with it. She sent Sirkin to take it out to the registered station mail clerk. The furniture and decorations of the outer lobby had already been returned and stowed in one of the holds. When Sirkin returned, the yacht would be sealed from the station, and the final unlock sequence would begin. It seemed to take no time at all, compared to the bigger, more populous ships she was used to. Her own crew closed and locked the outer and inner hatches. The station's crew did the same on their side of the access tube. The Sweet Delight, on her own air now, smelled no different. An hour of final systems checks remained. The crew seemed to be careful, if slow, in working down the last checklists. They didn't skip anything she noticed, although she didn't know all the sequences for this vessel.
Tug's in position, Captain Serrano.
The pilot had been positioning the yacht's bustle to protect it from the tug's grapples. Yachts were too small to fit the standard grapple arrangements. They carried special outriggers that gave the tugs a good grip and kept the main hull undamaged. Harris looked at the onboard chronometer. 2 minutes to their slot. She switched one channel of her comm to the tug's frequency.
Captain Serrano, Sweet Delight.
There. She'd said it, officially, to another vessel, and the stars did not fall.
Station tug 34, permission to grapple.
Permission to grapple.
Despite the bustle, she was sure she felt the yacht flinch as the tug caught hold. A perfect match of relative motion was rare, even now. Her status lights switched through red, orange, and yellow to green.
All fast on your signal.
On the other channel of her comm, the on-watch station master waited for her signal.
Captain Serrano of Sweet Delight, permission to undock on your signal.
All clear on station. Confirm all clear aboard.
The board spread emerald before her.
All clear aboard.
The coordinated computers broke the yacht's connection with the station. The tug dragged the yacht, still inert, her drives passive, safely away from the station and its crowded traffic lanes. Harris used this time to check the accuracy of the yacht's external sensors against station and tug reports of other traffic. Everything seemed to work as it should. She felt very odd, being towed without even the in-system drive powered up, but civilian vessels routinely launched cold, and the tug companies preferred it that way.
According to them, some idiot was likely to put his finger on the wrong button if he had power. They reached their assigned burn sector several hours later.
Confirm safe sector Blue Tango 34. Permission to release.
Permission to release grapples.
Harris nodded to the pilot and Gavin. The tug retracted its grapples and boosted slowly away.
Mr. Gavin, in-system drive.
The pilot was retracting the bustle and checking with visuals that the lockdown mechanism secured properly.
In-system drive.
The yacht's sublight drive lit its own set of boards.
Normal power up.
Harris could see that. She let out the breath she'd been holding. They'd done a power-up as part of the systems check, but that didn't mean it would power up again as smoothly.
Engage.
The artificial gravity seemed to shiver as the yacht's drive began a determined shove, much stronger than the tug's. Then it adjusted, and the yacht might have been sitting locked on planet somewhere.
Mr. Plisson, she's yours.
The pilot would have the helm until they made the first jump, and during jump sequences thereafter.
Sweet Delight, confirmed power-up, confirmed engagement, confirmed on course.
Yo, sweetie, come and see us again sometime. Tug 34 out.
Harris seethed at the pilot's amiable response, then realized that sweetie was probably this yacht's nickname, not an insult. After all, even service tug captains called the Yorktown Yorkie.
So here I go. Off to someplace I've never been so my employer can chase foxes over the ground on horseback and I can spend a month at Hospitality Bay making friends with other captains in the guild.
Somehow, the thought did not appeal. Harris had heard about cruise captains. Unlike the captains of scheduled passenger ships, they were expected to hobnob with guests, flattering and charming them. She would not cooperate if that's what Lady Cecilia had in mind. She would make it clear that she was a captain, not an entertainer. She would eat decent spacefaring meals in her own quarters, since the ship offered no separate wardroom for ship's officers. Cecilia had heard about space fleet captains from her sisters. Cold, mechanical, brutal, insensitive, which meant they had not worshipped at the shrine of her sister Berenice's beauty, she thought. She enjoyed her meals too much to invite a boor to share them. That first evening of the voyage proper, Harris ate in her cabin, working her way through a stack of maintenance and fitness logs. The crew cook provided a surprisingly tasty meal. She had been prepared for bland, reconstituted food, but the crisp greens of her salad had never seen a freeze-dry unit, she was sure. She missed having a proper wardroom for the officers' mess, but the officers on Sweet Delight, such as they were not likely to become rewarding dinner companions. At least Lady Cecilia had not stinted on fresh food or on the quality of maintenance. Harris nodded at the screen full of data. Not one back-alley refitter in the lot. If the lady was bent on hiring incompetence, as Harris had begun to suspect, she did so from some other motive than mere economy. The bills would have paid for refitting a larger and more dangerous ship than the yacht, but Harris supposed part of it went into cosmetics, like the decor, which reminded her she must explain to Lady Cecilia the need for tearing out that plush covering the umbilicals. She ignored the gooey dessert for another stalk of mint-flavored celery, slid her tray into the return bin, and called up data from the next refitting. So far, she refused to let herself contemplate all the future days, nothing had gone very wrong. This life might be bearable after all. Ronnie lay sprawled in the massage lounger, his admittedly handsome body still dripping sweat from his workout on the gym equipment. Cecilia eyed him sourly. She wanted a massage herself, but not on the clammy cushions he would leave behind. When she'd chosen the luxurious Zaur leather upholstery, she'd assumed she'd never have to share it. The saleswoman had mentioned the potential problem, and she had shrugged it off. Now she felt aggrieved, as if it were anyone's fault but hers.
"Yes, I do. And be prompt. Good food doesn't improve by sitting."
"Thank you, Lady Cecilia."
Rafaela appeared to be George's companion, slight and dark, though not as dark as Captain Serrano.
"These young men would never dress if you didn't make them, and we can't if they don't."
"Why not?"
Cecilia was in no mood to honor custom. She watched the girls share a glance. Then Rafaela tipped her head to one side.
"I feel silly, that's all. My red dress and the boys in skimps.
If you're going to feel silly just because some lummox doesn't live up to your expectations, you'll have a miserable life. Wear what you want and ignore them. Another shared glance.
That's what you do. And that's why you never married and live by yourself in a miserable little ship.
Cecilia stared him down. That's why I have the money and position I do, independent of any alliance, to do what I want. And that's why I was available to help you when you got yourself into this mess. Or perhaps you don't know that the first suggestion given your father was that you be packed off on an ore hauler to Verstine.
They wouldn't have!
They didn't, but largely because I was available and could be talked into it. If your mother... Well, never mind. But my point is that if I had been a conventional member of this family and married to some appropriate spouse, I would hardly have been free to take you on. You persist in regarding this as some kind of lark, but I assure you that most men, grown men such as your father and his friends, consider your breach of the lady's confidence a disgrace, even apart from its political implications. Ronnie reddened. Now, go make yourself fit for civilized company at dinner, all of you. That includes you young women. I do not consider the sort of clothes you wear to parties with your own set adequate. Cecilia actually had very little idea what kind of clothes they wore to parties with their own set, but had a clear memory of herself at 19 to 23. When they had left, Cecilia felt the cushions of the massage lounger and shuddered, entirely too clammy. She aimed a blow-dryer at it and decided on a short swim. The pool's privacy screen, a liquid crystal switchblade only from within, closed her into a frosted dome, onto which she projected a visual of overhanging forest. The water enfolded her. She let her body and mind merge with water and music, swimming languidly, just enough to counter the gentle current.
Time to dress, m'lady.
Bad words, bad words, bad words! Cecilia had gotten away with that in childhood, even before she learned any. Her stomach burned. If it hadn't been for Ronnie and his gang, she could have had dinner held until she was ready. And she'd have been ready, because she wouldn't have been interrupted. And her massage lounger wouldn't have been sweaty. She hauled herself out of the pool, hit the privacy control without thinking, and only then realized that with guests aboard, she would have to be more careful. Luckily, they were all off dressing. None of them had straggled back to ask a stupid question. Not that they didn't swim bare, but she had no desire to have them compare her body to their young ones. She walked into the warmed toweling robe that Myrtis held, and stood still while Myrtis rubbed her hair almost dry. Then she stepped into the warm fleece slippers, took another warmed towel, and headed for her own suite, still rubbing at her damp hair. It dried faster these days, being thinner. She hated the blow-dryers and would rather go to dinner a bit damp than use one. In her cabin, Myrtis had laid out her favorite dinner dress, a rich golden-brown she-silk accented with ivory lace. Cecilia let herself be dried, oiled, powdered, and helped into the clothes without thinking about it. Myrtis, unlike Oblice, her first maid, had never seen her young body. She treated Cecilia with professional correctness and the mild affection of someone who has worked for the same employer 15 years and hopes to retire in the same position. Cecilia sat, allowed Myrtis to fluff her short hair, with its odd spatchings of red and gray, and fastened on the elaborate necklace of amber and enameled copper that made the lace look even more delicate. Those girls might be 50 years younger, but they would know a Maris Limited design when they saw it, and it would have its effect. They would not know it had been designed for her by the original Maris or why, but that didn't matter. The plump roast fowl sent up a fragrance that made Cecilia's stomach subside from its tension. She glanced around the table and nodded to Bates. Service proceeded, a blend of human and robotic. A human handed her breast slices of roast and the gravy boat, but crumbs vanished without the need of a crumb brush.
Do you eat like this all the time, Lady Cecilia?
Sober, cured of her hangover, Bubbles was reasonably pretty, Cecilia thought, except that her gown looked as if it would burst with her next mouthful.
She was not so plump. The gown was that tight. She wore a warm, bright green. It showed off her white skin and blonde curls, although it clashed with the dark Raffaella's red dress. The other girl, Sarah, wore a blue that would have been plain had it not been silk brocade, a design of fishes, Dalbinian work.
Yes, why not? Cook is a genius, and I can afford it, so...
Tell us about your new captain. Why you choose a space fleet officer?
Why was she available?
Less handsome than Ronnie, which Cecilia might have approved, the odious George had the sort of gloss she distrusted, as if he'd been coated with varnish.
I wasn't satisfied with my former captain's performance.
As if they had a right to ask. Cecilia knew she mellowed with good food. It was one reason she made sure to have it. She wasn't going to admit that if Captain Olin had held to her schedule, she'd have been safely distant and unavailable when Ronnie was exiled. Why waste good ammunition?
I wanted more efficiency, better leadership. Before, they were always coming to me complaining about this and that, or getting crossways with staff. I thought an officer from the regular space service would know how to maintain discipline and follow my orders.
Oh, the regs are crazy for discipline. Remember when Courier transferred, Ronnie? He didn't last 6 weeks. It was all nonsense. It's not as if all that spit and polish and saluting accomplishes anything.
Buttons, Bunny's middle son, looked surprisingly like his father as he ran a thumb down the side of his nose. Gesture, decided Cecilia, and not features. He had his mother's narrow, beaky nose and her caramel-colored hair.
Oh, I don't know. You can't get along with no discipline.
And his mother's penchant for taking the other side of any argument, Cecilia told herself. In the girl, it had been fun to watch. But as Bunny's wife, she had caused any number of social ruptures by choosing exactly the wrong moment to point out that not everyone agreed. The incident of the fish knives still rankled in Cecilia's memory. She wondered which parent Bubbles took after.
Now, we're not talking about no discipline. We're talking about the ridiculous iron-fisted excuse for discipline in the regs. I don't mind fitness tests and qualifying exams. Even with modern techniques, the best family can throw an occasional brainless wonder. But I really do not see any reason for archaic forms of military courtesy that have no relevance to modern warfare.
Button shrugged without looking up from his food. He had the blissful expression most of Cecilia's guests wore when they first encountered the products of Cook's genius. George looked around for another source of conversation and found the others all engaged in their meal. With the faintest echo of Buttons's shrug, he too began to eat. The rest of the meal passed in relative silence. The roast fowl had been followed by a salad of fresh diced vegetables in an iced sauce strongly flavored with parsley, Cecilia's favorite eccentricity, and one which never failed to startle guests. It awoke, she contended, the sleepy palates which the roast had soothed and satisfied. Crisp rounds of a distant descendant of potato followed, each centered with a rosette of pureed prawns. The trick, which no one but her own cook seemed to manage, was to have the slices of potato boiled slightly before roasting, so that the outer surfaces were almost crunchy, but the inside mealy. The young people, she noted, took additional servings of potato, as they had of the roast fowl. Finally, Bates brought in tiny, flaky pastries stuffed with finely diced fruit in chocolate and cinnamon sauce. One each, although Cecilia knew that a few would be waiting for her later, safely hidden from the young people. Satiety slowed them down, she noticed, nibbling her own pastry with deliberate care. They looked as if they wanted to throw themselves back in deep chairs and lounge. "Not in my dining room," she thought, and smiled. The elegant but uncomfortable chairs that Berenice's designer had foisted on her had their purpose after all. Cecilia neither knew nor cared about the current social fashions of the young. In her young days, the great families had revived, or continued, the custom of a separate withdrawal of each sex with itself for a time after dinner, the women moving to one room and the men to another. She had resented it, and in her own yacht ignored it. Either she invited guests, all of them, to continue their discussion in the lounge, or she excused herself and let them do what they would. Tonight, with a good meal behind her, she felt mellow enough to grant them more of her time. Perhaps well-fed, with hangovers behind them, they would be amusing. At least she might hear some interesting gossip, Since none of them seemed to have the slightest reticence, she got to her feet.
Let's move to the lounge.
The young people stood as they ought, but Ronnie frowned.
If it's all the same to you, Aunt Ceci, I'd rather watch a show. We brought our own cubes.
The dark girl, Raffaella, opened her mouth as if to protest, but then shut it.
Very well.
Snub her, would they? On her own yacht? She would not stoop to equal their discourtesy, but she would not forget it either.
Wait, Ronnie, we really should...
Never mind. I'm sure you're quite right. You would only be bored talking with an old lady.
Cecilia turned on her heel and stalked out, leaving them to find their own way. At least she didn't have to spend more time in that disgusting lavender and teal lounge the designer had left her. She toyed with the idea of having the yacht redone and charging it to her sister, but the quick humor that always followed her quick temper reminded her how ridiculous that would be. Like the time she and Berenice had quarreled, only to discover that her brothers had taped the row for the amusement of an entire gang of little boys. She shook her head. This time she was justified in her anger. She wasn't ready to laugh. Myrtis, recognizing storm signals, stood ready to remove her jewels. Cecilia smiled at her in the mirror as the deft fingers unhooked the necklace.
The young people prefer to watch entertainment cubes. I'll be reading late, I expect.
What she really wanted to do was hook up the system and take a long, strenuous ride. But that would mean another swim to cool off, and she suspected the young people would keep late hours. When Myrtis handed her the brocade robe, she slipped it on and went back to her study. Here, with the door closed and the evening lights on in the solarium, she could lie back in her favorite chair and watch the nightlife. Two fan lizards twined around a fern frond, their erectile fans quivering and shimmering with delicate colors. At the sculpted water fountain, two fine-boned miniature horses dipped their heads to drink. They were not, of course, real horses. Other small species had gone into their bioengineering specs. But in the dusky light, they looked real, or magical, depending on her mood. Something flickered along the shadowy floor of the tiny forest, and a seer owl swooped. Then it stood, talons clubbed on its prey, and stared at her with silvery eyes. Not really at her, of course. It saw the window's far-side illusion, a net of silvery strands that even an owl would not dare. The little horses had thrown up their heads, muzzles dripping. When the action began, they had shied, but returned to the water as the owl began to feed. Cass and Vicka, Celia thought. Her favorite of the little mares and her yearling. In daytime lighting, the mare was honey gold dappled with brown on top, with a white belly and striped mane of dark and cream. It was as close as Cecilia had ever found in the miniatures to her performance horse. Most breeders of the tiny animals liked the exotic colors the non-equine species introduced. When the mare led the young one back into the undergrowth, Cecilia blanked the window. Now she had the view that in all her memory made her happiest— her study at Orchard Hall, with the window overlooking the stable yard. Across the yard, the open top doors of a dozen stalls, and the horses looking out eagerly for morning feed. If she wanted, she could set the view into motion in a long loop that covered the entire day's activities. She could include sounds and even the smell, although Myrtis would sniff afterwards and spray everything with mint. But she could not walk out the door over there, the one with the comfortable, old-fashioned handle, and step into her former life. She shrugged, angry at herself for indulging even this much self-pity, and called up a new view, a seascape out a lighthouse window. She added the audible and olfactory inputs and made herself breathe deeply of the salt tang in the air. She had told Myrtis she would read late. She would read. And not a cube, but a real book, which enforced concentration far better. She allowed herself the indulgence of choosing an old favorite, The Family of Dialan Saloon, a weakly witty attack on the pomposity of noble families four generations past.
Her sweet young breast roused against the foe, Marilisa noted that it had not hands nor tentacles with which to wield the appropriate weaponry.
Knowing it was coming, it still made her laugh. By the end of the first chapter, she had finally quit grumbling inside about Ronnie and his friends. She could always hide out in her cabin reading,
They would think she was sulking miserably and never know that her sides ached from laughing. Harris had had no idea a yacht could be this complicated. It was so small, after all, with so few people aboard. But rich civilians did nothing efficiently. As she worked her way through the manuals, the schematics, the overlays, she wished she'd had weeks aboard before the first voyage. Hours were not enough. She wrinkled her nose at the desk screen, muttering. The owner's quarters separate from the household staff's quarters, and both separate from crew quarters. Four complete and separate hydroponic systems, crew support, household support, food, and flowers.
Flowers?
She pushed that aside to consider later. Ship's crew, her people, were responsible for all life support, but not for the household food and flowers. Ship's crew maintained all the physical plant, the wiring, the comm connections. In one of the few duties that did overlap, the household kitchen supplied the crew. Not Madame's own cook, of course, but her assistants. Eventually, she went in search of further enlightenment and chose the most senior employee aboard, Bates. She had stayed out of his path, which seemed to be what he expected, but no captain could command without knowledge.
The Serrano Legacy Hunting Party is continued on the next CD.